Hope that everybody had a good Lord's Day. I don't, am I on? No. I'm on here, so it's a problem back there. I want to encourage everybody, while our members are gone to Panama on their mission trip, to challenge you every day, maybe at lunch or at some other time, to take a few minutes from your lunch time and say a special prayer for them and for their safety, for their work, and for the souls that they'll be touching. And I believe that the prayers of Christians will do great things. And we can, while we're not in Panama, we can lend a hand with our prayers. And I hope and pray that everybody here will dedicate themselves to do that while they are in the mission field. Tonight we continue on people that God wants you to know. And we're going to talk about tonight the Herods. And I say the Herods, I think sometimes we think that there was just one of them. You know, we read Herod and Herod here and Herod there, and we think that's the same old guy. But it's not. In fact, it's quite a number of men across the New Testament pages. When we go to the intertestamental period, that period between Malachi and Matthew, we see that Jewish independence during that time came to an end when certain individuals that were seeking the Jewish throne made the terrible mistake of inviting the Romans to help them, right? And so Pompey came in 63 BC, and he conquered Jerusalem and brought the Jews into the Roman Empire. In 37 BC, shortly thereafter, the Herod family came to rule in Palestine. Now, this family is a part of many of the events of the New Testament. Unfortunately, we have made the mistake sometimes of not realizing that this was a line of people. We begin with, and there in 37 BC, Herod the Great. And he ruled from 37 BC until 3 BC. Now, Herod was not a Jew. In fact, none of the Herods were Jews. He was an Edomian. And they were forced to convert to Judaism by John Hyrcanus, the first king of the Maccabean rule during the independence of the Jews in the intertestamental period between 104 and 135. But they were not really Jews. They were just forced to conform to many of the Jewish teachings. Sometimes we think these men were Jews and they were not. Herod the Great was appointed king of the Jews by the Roman Senate in 40 BC. And with the help of his good friend Mark Antony, it's amazing when we begin to look at these characters, they touch people that you read about in history. Famous people like Mark Antony. His good friend Mark Antony, he conquered the city of Jerusalem and took the throne. He is famous for his building efforts. He was a man that was constantly building incredible things. The city of Caesarea on the coastline, which the Apostle Paul came and went a couple of times from, was an incredible city where they literally built the harbor right out there with huge, enormous stones. It's an amazing thing. Most of it's still there today. But he built that city. He built the Masada fortress near the Dead Sea. In a place where there was no water, Herod brought water and filled enormous cisterns and had that place for himself just in case he got caught in a rebellion and needed somewhere to run and hide. He didn't end up running to hide there. The Jews did. And the Romans had to spend 2 years trying to take that fortress. That's how well that fortress was made and defended. He also built the temple in the city of Jerusalem, considered one of the wonders of the ancient world, a building that you could not look at in direct sunlight because it was built with a stone that had a high crystal content and it would shine literally back and glimmer when the sun shone on it directly. Herod started building the temple in 20 BC, 16 years before the Lord was born, and it was completed in 62 AD. It stood for 8 years complete. It's been all that time, some 83 years building the temple. It stood for 8 years, and the Romans did not leave, as Jesus promised in Matthew chapter 24. They did not leave one stone upon another. They tore it down in a very short period of time. Herod was famous for his unbelievable cruelty. He killed several of his wives. He killed several of his sons. He was incredibly paranoid. It was said that a Roman emperor once said that he would rather be one of Herod's pigs than one of Herod's sons, because it was a lot safer to be a pig than his son, because he killed so many of his sons. What was the most famous cruel act, though, that Herod committed? I think most of us can recount that one. When he killed the babies, Matthew chapter 2 and verse 16, those babies that were 1 year old or younger in the area around the city of Bethlehem. Now, I know you're saying, wait, my Bible says 2 year old, Nathan, but I want to remind you that they didn't count age as we do. You were one in your first year of life. You were two on your, what we would consider, your first birthday. During his rule, there developed a party that we hear about in the New Testament called the Herodians. These individuals supported Herod and his family and Roman rule. You know, and it's interesting that the direct opposition to this Herod party was a party called the Zealots. And they would go around and they would kill Herodians. They had no problem killing Roman supporters. And yet Jesus Christ would take 12 men, and two of those men, one would be a zealot, and one would be a Roman tax collector. Does the gospel have the power to change people? Does the gospel have the power to meld people diametrically opposed together into one direction, Jesus Christ? I believe Jesus showed that with the selection of those men. Herod the Great married another well-known name. He was, for a short time, married to Cleopatra. Now, there was some debate at one time that this was a different Cleopatra than the Cleopatra of Egypt with Mark Antony, but it is not. Most historians now are beginning to lean and believe that this was the Cleopatra that we read about in so many history stories of Egypt. He's married to her. In fact, he had children by her. He supported Mark Antony and Cleopatra in their rebellion until it was clear that Augustus or Octavian was going to defeat them. And then Herod, being the pragmatic guy he was, you know, Mark, you're my good friend, and Cleopatra, you're my ex-wife, but sorry, y'all are about to be dead, and I want to live. So he abandoned them, he switched sides, and he went over to Augustus, who rewarded him for that. It is said that Herod died a terribly agonizing death, which many modern scholars today, having examined the evidence of what was taking place with him, believes that he died a long, drawn-out death due to gangrene. He literally became so infected, and it destroyed his body piece by piece. When Herod the Great died, it was 3 B.C. And you know, just taking the dates that Jesus was born in 4 B.C., and he killed the babies that were 1 year old, and he dies in 3 B.C., he died very shortly after he killed those babies. We'll talk about that more in a moment. Caesar Augustus then had to resolve a dispute between the sons of Herod the Great, and he divided Palestine between them. First, one of them was Herod Arsalus, and he ruled Judea, Idumea, and Samaria from 3 BC to 6 AD. The beginning of his rule is mentioned in Matthew chapter 2 and verse 22, where it says, "But when he heard that Arsalus was reigning over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there," he there being Joseph. Arsalus was removed by the Roman Emperor Augustus and banished to Gaul because of his terrible cruelty to the Jewish people. And he died shortly thereafter. From that point forward, Judea would be ruled by Roman governors. And you probably don't know any of the names of those Roman governors until you get to the sixth one. And you're going to recognize his name as Pontius Pilate. Herod Philip II, the son of Cleopatra, would rule in Trachonitis and Batanea and Aronitis. The city of Caesarea Philippi that Jesus' ministry takes place around is named for him there in Galilee, or on the Sea of Galilee. And we see that city in the ministry of Christ. Then there's Herod Antipas, maybe the one that we know even better than Herod the Great. He ruled Galilee and Perea from 3 B.C. to AD 39. He is the Herod most mentioned in the New Testament. Jesus called him in Luke chapter 13, verses 31 and 32. He said, "That fox." Now, Jesus didn't call people names very often. But he called this man a name, talking about that he was sneaky, that fox, Herod. The majority of Jesus' ministry was carried out in the regions that Herod Antipas ruled. Now, he divorced his wife named Aretas, who was the daughter of a ruler of the Nabateans, and he married his niece and wife and the wife of his half-brother, Philip I, not the Philip we just mentioned, but a different Philip, but was also a son of Herod the Great, married the wife of his half-brother, Philip I. Her name was Herodias. She was the granddaughter of Herod the Great. Herod the Great had executed her father, one of those sons that Herod did not like. John the Baptist condemned this adulterous marriage and was beheaded by Herod at the request of Herodias and her daughter. This is also the Herod that would make fun of Jesus Christ, mock him on the night that he died, the night before he died. He was the one that when Pilate sent him to Herod, Herod said, I want you to do some kind of magic trick. Do a miracle for me. Entertain me. And Jesus wasn't there to entertain Herod. And he wouldn't do it. Herod got bored and sent him back to Pilate. He was eventually exiled to Gaul, which is modern-day France, by the Roman Emperor Caligula. Then we have a Herod Agrippa I. He is the brother of Herodias, the woman we just mentioned that had John the Baptist beheaded, nephew of Herod Antipas, and his father was killed by his grandfather Herod the Great, as we've already mentioned. He used his friendship with Emperor Caligula to be made king of Galilee. He used Caligula, his influence with his friend, to have Herod Antipas exiled so that he could become king. Acts chapter 12, we see his handiwork when he kills the apostle James, has him beheaded with the sword. Acts chapter 12 and verses 20 through 23, very shortly after that event, he allows the people to call him God, doesn't he? And he is stricken by an angel. Sometimes I think we get the idea that he died instantaneously. It says he was eaten with worms. Not according to history. Oh, I think he was stricken that day. I think his death was a very different thing. He suffered horribly for many, many days, screaming. They said you could hear his screams throughout the palace. As he screamed at the top of his lung in such terrible, terrible pain, he suffered for days on end. He was so evil that in these last days of his life, he ordered all the Jewish leaders to be rounded up and to be put away. And he said, on the day that I die, you kill them all so that someone will mourn the day of my death. He died. Those that were around him did not carry out that order. They did not kill those people. But the fact that he gave that order gives us an insight into the man, doesn't it? That even in death, he was trying to do great atrocities. Herod Agrippa II, he is the last Herod that we see in the Bible to hold, and he's the last Herod to hold a kingdom. He was 17 years old and being educated in Rome when his father died, the one that just was eaten with worms. He had an incestuous relationship with his sister Bernice, a relationship that was even frowned upon and was the talk of the city of Rome as well. Even a city as immoral as Rome looked at what he was doing and thought it was something that was not desirable. His other sister was married to Felix, procurator of Judea, when Paul was imprisoned. He was close to the Jews. Jews liked him. He came to Jerusalem. He paved the streets of Jerusalem in white marble for the Jews. He promoted Judaism. He even met and listened to the Apostle Paul, didn't he? In Acts chapter 25, verses 13 through 26, or verse 13 through chapter 26 and verse 32, Paul told Agrippa, I know you believe the prophets. You know, Agrippa seemed to be a person, while you look at this incestuous relationship, certainly he wasn't a moral man. He didn't have very many redeeming qualities. But there seemed to be some part of him that wanted to find some kind of religion in his life. He seemed to want to believe the prophets. Paul said, I know you do. But the famous statement, right? Agrippa said, Paul, if you keep talking, I'm going to become a Christian, right? And so he left. He didn't talk to Paul anymore. He left the room. Verses 31 through 32, we see that Agrippa could see that Paul was not guilty of anything that merited his being in prison, but Paul had already appealed to the Roman emperor. Herod Agrippa tried and failed to stop the insurrection of the Jews in AD 66. In the end, he did side with the Romans, and after they violently suppressed the Jews and destroyed the city of Jerusalem, he was given back his throne. You know, as I thought about that, I thought, what was he given back? I mean, the Roman armies came through Palestine like a swarm of locusts. They just laid waste to every city, every town. They took all the towns around Jerusalem before they even decided to go and destroy the city of Jerusalem. Due to his close relationship with Emperor Titus, the man who destroyed Jerusalem was on the scene, literally there at Jerusalem. Agrippa moved to Rome, where he died around AD 93. Now, I believe that it is important that we understand these characters that appear in the New Testament. I think we want to have a deep understanding of God's Word, and that requires knowing people, that requires knowing places, that requires knowing events involved in the overall narrative so that we better understand the narrative of what took place in the first century, in the first century church. I think there are three lessons that we can take from the Herods. Number one, resisting God will always result in God's judgment, won't it? Always. No one gets out of that one. You know, I don't know. We know from Acts chapter 12, it's clear that Herod Agrippa the First and his resistance to God caused him to die a terrible death, didn't it? Literally, the Bible says an angel struck him. That was a direct act of God upon him. Now, we don't have a record that God directly acted upon Herod the Great, but it sure was awful close to his great atrocity of killing those babies, wasn't it? That he died a terrible death as well. And the Bible doesn't tell us everything God's doing in any given time. Most of the Herods did come to bad ends in their lives. God's judgment is there. God's judgment will always be there. You know, we may escape God's judgment this life. You may do evil things. Somebody out there may do evil things, and we may never see any kind of what we think would be retribution in this life, but know that they do not escape. But there is a day coming when God's judgment will bring those things before Him, and they will be dealt with righteously. God's judgment will be against those that resist Him. The book of Revelation, if you were to break it down into one simple message, it is that God will deal with those that try to destroy His church. Oh, they can try, and they have tried, haven't they? But look at the nations and the empires that have tried, and I ask you, where are they today? They have felt the judgment hand of God, and they lie in dust. And here we are tonight, still the Lord's church. Number two, evil and righteousness have a generational quality to them. You know, they all followed the evils of their fathers. We will pass on something of ourselves to our children. We will pass on something of ourselves to our grandchildren. We'll pass on something of ourselves to those we know, to our friends. What are we giving them? What are we passing on to them? What are we teaching them? And if that's carried on generationally, what have we passed on in this life? You know, I may never, the rate I'm going, I won't have any money in the bank to leave to my children, so they better get good jobs. But I hope I leave them something more important. I don't care if I leave them a penny. I do want to leave them God. I do want them to leave that to their children, and their children to their children. I want there to be seven or, you know, however many generations are between now and the time the Lord comes, that from me to my and Jenny to our children, that is generationally passed on. We teach our children Christianity. our children will follow our lead in so many ways. And they did. These men became just like their fathers. You know, even look in the Old Testament, right? And God uses that terminology. They did as their father David did, right? They acted righteously. Or they did as some other person, you know, or he did, or some were evil and they did as their father did that was evil. So God even saw the generational qualities of evil and righteousness. And last of all, great men of the world come and go, but the church and the gospel go on. You know, I think sometimes in our world today, we think about being famous, we think about being well known, we think about making some kind of huge impact in our secular world as if that's going to be remembered somehow. What do you know about the great business and political men of the first 25 years of the 20th century? Anybody here know much about those guys? The ones that were really making the decisions, the ones that were really making the plans? I bet most would have trouble even telling me who the presidents of the United States were during that time. Know much about Carnegie and Astor? Man, those guys were giants. And just a little over 100 years later, most people don't even know who they are. People still know who Jesus Christ is, though. People still know who Abraham is, nearly 4,000 years later. Men of God, whether they're remembered by people on this earth are remembered in heaven. You know, we seek sometimes to give ourselves to passing glory.